myself wanting to make sure she was somewhere close. All right, I said. But the same rules I gave the kids. I'm in charge. You do what I say, when I say, or you stay here. Susan pursed her lips and narrowed her eyes. I kind of like the sound of that, she said, teasing me. I like that look on you, too. Have you ever thought about growing a beard? Then she smiled and vanished into the hallway. I scowled after her. She'd stay away from the worst of it. I'd make sure of that, if I had to tie her to the van myself. I muttered something grouchy, bent my head to one side, and inhaled, smelling the smell of new leather, of fresh clothes and soap, and of Eau de Susan still lingering on my skin. I liked it. The jacket creaked as I started forward, and I caught sight of myself in the dresser mirror. My double, the one from the dream, stared back out at me. Only the roughness of the 3-day growth of dark whiskers and the bruises were at contrast with the subconscious me's neatly trimmed beard. Everything else was precisely the same. I turned my face away rather quickly and paced out of the room, out to the van, where the others were waiting. Showtime. Chapter 28. The moon rose in silver splendor into an October sky, strewn with pale clouds and brilliant stars. The clouds churned, a white seafoam sea, and the moon was a vast, graceful clipper ship, its sails full of spectral light as it ran before the strength of the cold autumn winds. Pale light bleached each of the uncut stones on the 9-foot wall around Gentleman Johnny Marconi's Gold Coast estate, making edges sharper, shadows blacker, until it looked like a barrier made of gaping white skulls. Trees grew up thick on the other side of the wall, blocking the view of the interior, though no branches extended far enough to provide a way to climb over it. "We've got to get over the wall," I said to the enormous dark wolf beside me, keeping my voice low as we all crouched in the shadows of the bushes across the street from Marconi's estate. "There'll be security on it. Maybe cameras. Maybe infrared beams. Maybe something else. I want you to find a way past it." The wolf flickered her amber eyes toward me and made a soft, assenting growl. Then she simply turned and faded into the darkness, leaving 5 more furry, crouching shapes grouped around me. The alphas didn't exactly inspire confidence, but they'd all managed to master enough rudimentary magic to transform themselves into very, very close approximations of wolves, at least. It was something. Susan had parked the van on a hill leading up to Marconi's estate and remained in it in case we needed a quick getaway. When we arrived, nude Tara West and 5 young people, 3 female and 2 male, had leapt out of the van, and the alphas hurriedly tumbled out of their robes. "Hell's bells," I complained. "We're on a public street. Can't you be something besides naked here, people?" Tara had smirked, and in a liquid shimmer become a gaunt, dark wolf, a beast fully as large as Denton and his cronies had been, but with a narrower muzzle and cleaner proportions. Like Denton and his crew of Hexenwolfen, she kept the exact same shade and color of her eyes, even in wolfish form. "Well," I demanded of the others, "let's hurry it up." Georgia had slipped her lean body from her dark robe and melted in a few seconds into her wolf shape, then had quickly slipped past me to go to Tara. Billy growled something under his breath as he shrugged out of his robe, catching one sleeve on his arm as he began to change. Billy Wolf had stumbled over the robe, still hanging on his forepaw, tripped and tumbled into the street with a woof of expelled breath and a little whimper. I rolled my eyes. Billy the Wolf had snarled and struggled out of his robe, picked it up carefully in his teeth like a large and particularly grumpy-looking Benji, and put it back in the van. One of the other girls had said, a red-haired lass who filled out her robe a little too generously. "We're still a little new at this." She covered herself with her arms awkwardly and let her robe fall from her shoulders as she whispered a little chant, and had become a rather round, hefty-looking she-wolf with dark auburn fur. She moved daintily to the edge of the cargo van and had minced, despite her weight, down the street. The other 2 young people, a lanky, dark-haired boy and a scrawny girl with mouse-brown hair, had made the change and loped up the hill after Tara, and then we all had moved as quickly as we could to the rear of Marconi's estate. Surrounded by a high stone wall, the property occupied an entire block, bounded on all four sides by individual streets. None of us had known the layout to Marconi's place, so we had chosen to approach from the rear on general principle of sneakiness. I hadn't thought it would be wise to walk up to the front door, so I had dispatched Tara to find us a way in while I remained behind with the Alphas. I found myself tapping my fingers on my thighs as I crouched, restless. I soon realized that if I was tense, the would-be werewolves were twice as keyed up. The darkest furred one, Billy, I thought, rose to his paws and started away in the opposite direction from which Tara had gone. Georgia growled at him, Billy growled back, and the other males rose to follow him. Great, I thought. I can't afford to let the Alphas wander off now, no matter how restless they are. Hey, I said quietly, you can't go herring off now. If there's a way inside, Tara will find it. The wolves all turned their heads and their very human eyes toward me. Billy planted his paws stubbornly and growled. Oh, don't give me that, I snapped, glaring at him without meeting his eyes. You promised you'd play this my way, Billy. This isn't time to be messing around. Billy's stance became less certain, and I beckoned all of them toward me. If I could keep them listening until Tara got back, at least I could be sure that they'd be around when I needed them. Huddle up, everyone, I said. I wanted to go over some things before we go in. There was a brief silence, and then a crowding of furry, heavy bodies and a snuffling of wet noses. 10 ears pricked up and rotated toward me, and 10 bright, human eyes fastened on me from lupine faces. I suppressed a sudden urge to say, Good evening, class. I'm your teacher, Mr. Dresden, and instead put on my most serious expression. You all know what's at stake tonight, I said, that we could all get killed. We're going to be confronting a bunch of law enforcement people who have gotten hold of some magic that's as black as anything I've ever seen, and are using it to turn themselves into wolves. They've lost control of the power they've grabbed. They're killing people. And if we don't stop them, they're going to kill a lot more. Especially me, because I know too much. I'm a danger to them. But I don't want that. I don't want anyone to get killed. Not us, and not them. Maybe they deserve it, maybe not. The power they grabbed has turned into a drug for them, and they're not really in control of themselves anymore. I just don't think we'd be much different than them if we went out there planning to wipe them out. It isn't enough to stand up and fight darkness. You have to stand apart from it, too. You've got to be different from it. I cleared my throat. Hell, I'm not good at this. Go for their belts, if you can, just like I did in the alley. Once their belts are off, they're not going to be as crazy, and maybe we'll be able to talk to them. I glanced up at the wall and back down. Just don't get killed, guys. Do what you have to do to stay alive. That's your first priority. And if you got to kill them to do it, then don't hesitate. There was a great chorus of growls from around me, led by the wolf Billy, but that was a great thing about being the only human being there. I was the only one who could talk. There wouldn't have been any arguments, even if they had disagreed. Their enthusiasm was a little intimidating. If you were any louder, wizard, Tara's soft voice came from behind me, we might as well walk through the front gate. I jumped and looked to see Tara, naked and human, crouched down a few feet away. I wish you wouldn't do that, I hissed at her. Did you find a way in? Yes, she said. A place where the wall is crumbled. But it is far for you to walk, around along the eastern wall, toward the front of the property. We must run if we are to get inside in time. I grimaced. I'm not in any shape to run anywhere. It would seem you have little choice. I also saw many streaks of light across the front gate. There are black boxes with glass eyes every 70 or 80 paces. They do not see the crumbling place. It is a fortunate position. Cameras, I muttered. Hell. Come, wizard, Tara said, crouching down on all fours. We have no time to waste if you are to join us. The pack can cover the distance in moments, but you must hurry. Tara, I've had a rough couple of days. I'd fall over in about 2 minutes if I tried to run somewhere. The woman blinked passionless amber eyes up at me. Your point? I'm going over the wall right here, I said. Tara looked up at the wall and shook her head. I cannot bring the pack over that wall. They are not strong enough to keep changing back and forth. They have no hands in their wolf form. Just me, then. I guess you all can find me? Tara snorted. Of course, but it is foolish for you to go over the wall alone. And what if the cameras see you? Let me worry about the cameras, I said. Help me up to the top. Then you and the Alpha circle around and rendezvous with me. Tara scowled, the expression dark. I think this is foolish, Wizard. If you are too wounded to run, then you are too wounded to go in alone. We don't have time, I said, with a glance up at the moon, to argue about this. Do you want my help or don't you? Tara let out a sound somewhere between a snort and a snarl, and for a moment, tension in her muscles made them stand out hard against her skin. One of the Alphas let out a little whimper and stepped from us. Very well, Wizard, Tara said. I will show you the nearest camera and help you over the wall. Do not move from where you land. We do not know who is on the other side of the wall or where. Don't worry about me, I said. Worry about yourself. If there's a good way through the wall, Den might show up there, too, to go in. Or Mac Finn might. Mac Finn, Tara said, traces of pride in her voice and fear in her eyes. Will not even notice that the wall got in his way. I grimaced. Just show me the camera. Tara led me forward through the dark, silent and naked, and looking as though she didn't mind the cold evening at all. The grass was damp, plush, and deep. Tara pointed out the small, silent square of the video camera settled into the wall across the street, and almost entirely hidden by the shadows of the trees. I licked my lips and leaned toward the camera, keeping my own form obscured by the bushes. I squinted my eyes and drew in my will, trying to focus. My head started to pound at once, and I felt sweat break out beneath my arms and across my forehead. Hexing up anything mechanical is usually fairly simple. The field of magic that surrounds practitioners of the art plays havoc with the implements of technology. A passing thought on the right kind of day can blow out a cellular phone or kill a photocopier. This was the wrong kind of day. That field of energy around me was severely depleted from its usual levels, and the metaphysical muscles I would normally use to manipulate that energy were screaming in agony, reflected in pain throughout my body. But I needed to get inside, and I really did think that I wouldn't be able to make it all the way around the property. I was running on empty already, and too much more would leave me gasping like a fish out of water and wishing I was home in bed. I forced calm on my thoughts and focused all the energy I had, and it hurt me, starting in my head and spreading out into weary aches in my knees and elbows. But the energy built and built, and with it pain, until I could hold it together no longer. Malevaso, I whispered, and pushed my hand out at the square shape, like a grade school girl throwing a baseball wrong-handed. The power I'd gathered, though it felt like it was about to split me at the seams, rushed out in an almost impotent little hiccup of magic and swirled drunkenly toward the security camera. For a long time, nothing happened. And then there was a flash of light and a tiny shower of sparks from the rear of the box. Smoke drizzled up from the camera in a quavering plume, and I felt a small surge of triumph. At least I had something left in me, even if it was aneurysm causing labor to perform the mildest of tasks. All right, then, I said a second later, my voice somewhat thready. Let's go. We looked around and made sure no cars were about. Then Tara, the Alphas, and I rushed across the road through some decorative leafy bushes to the high stone wall. Tara laced her fingers together to form a stirrup. I put my good foot in it and pushed up hard. She heaved me up and threw me over the wall. I caught myself at the top, saw the car's headlights coming, and swiftly rolled down the other side, falling heavily into damp, muddy earth. It was dark. It was really dark. I was crouched at the base of the wall, underneath a spreading canopy of bare tree branches and stubborn sycamore leaves. Moonlight filtered through in random places, but it only served to make the dark spots all the more gloomy. My own black leather duster was utterly invisible, and I remembered reading somewhere that the gleam of my eyes and teeth would be the most likely to give me away. But since I didn't feel like sitting in the dark with my eyes closed, I didn't. Instead, I crouched and got my confiscated gun ready in one pocket and took my ace in the hole out of the other, getting that ready as well. I shivered and worked hard to remind myself not to be afraid. Then I waited in the darkness for my allies, and waited, and waited. Time passed, and I knew that a minute would feel like an hour, so I began counting, one number for every deliberate breath. The wind blew through the trees, brisk and cool. Leaves rustled, and droplets of rainwater fell from the trees around me, making little pattering sounds as it struck my new coat. They clung to the leather in tight beads and caught pieces of moonlight in them, brilliant against the black. The smell of rich earth and damp stone rose with the wind, and for a moment it did almost feel as though I was in a forest, rather than on a crime lord's private estate in the north end of Chicago. I took deep breaths, a little comforted by the illusion, and kept on counting, and waited. Nothing happened. No wolves, no sounds, nothing. It wasn't until I got to 100 that I started to get really nervous. My stomach began a slow twist that made weak sensations lace out through my arms and legs like slivers of ice. Where was Terra? Where were the Alphas? It shouldn't have taken them nearly so long to get to the inside of the wall and then cover the distance back to me. Though the estate was huge, the distance surely meant little to the flashing speed of a wolf. The evening had obviously been moving along entirely too smoothly, I thought. Something had gone wrong. I was alone. Chapter 29. Alone. It's one of those small words that means entirely too much, like fear or trust. I'm used to working alone. It goes with the territory. Wizards at my level of skill and strength, well, my usual levels, are few and far between. Maybe no more than 24 in the United States, with a slightly higher concentration of them in Europe, Africa, and Asia. But there is a difference between working alone and finding yourself facing a hat full of foes on a cold night, while wounded, in the dark, and practically helpless. It took me about 10 seconds to become acutely aware of that difference. Fear settled in comfortably. Fear was something I was used to. I was able to think past it, to focus on my predicament. Yay for me. My body reacted the same old way, keying up for fight or flight, while I forced my breathing to stay even. The smart thing to do would be to run, turn around and go back to the van and have Susan drive me the hell away. Granted, I probably couldn't even climb the wall on my own, but I could have tried. But I was already committed. I was here to do battle with the forces of evil, such as they were. I had dropped the challenge to them, not the other way around. Besides, if Tara and the kids were in trouble, I was the only one who could help them. I climbed to my feet, getting out the gun, and moved forward through the woods in a direction that seemed perpendicular to the line of the stone wall behind me. The woods were thick, sycamores and poplars giving way to evergreens with scratchy, low branches. I slipped through them as best I could, moving as quietly as I could manage. I didn't think I made more noise than the wind did, as it rattled the branches and the falling leaves and stirred more droplets of water to fall. In time, maybe 3 or 4 minutes, I came to the edge of the woods and looked out onto Gentleman Johnny Marconi's estate. It was magnificent. Something out of a Home and Garden magazine. You could have put a small golf course in Marconi's backyard. A long ways off, at the front of the property, Marconi's huge white house stood serene and flawless, artistically illuminated by dozens of lights, with a veranda or patio larger than a dance floor plotted out at the rear. Behind it, 3 enormous square plots, side by side, contained lit and lovely gardens, terraced down a gently sloping hill toward me. At the hill's base was a pretty little vale, and there was a small pond, which I realized after a moment was an enormous concrete-lined swimming pool, lit from beneath the surface. The pool was irregularly shaped, and one corner of the pool stirred near the surface. Steam lay thick over the water. Standing stately sentinel toward the center of the vale was a ring of evergreens, thick and stocky trees that concealed whatever was at their center. 2 rounded hillocks decorated the left side of the vale's landscape, one of them surrounded by what looked like a replica of a small ruined shrine or temple, all cracked marble and fallen columns. The whole place was well lit, both by silver moonlight and by lighting placed at strategic intervals. The lawn was immaculate, and the trees dotted the grounds in a sort of careless perfection that only an army of expensive gardeners could possibly have maintained. And they say the crime doesn't pay. I took a position behind a screen of trees and brush and looked around the grounds with a careful, stealthy caution. I didn't have long to wait. There was a rush of motion from beneath one of the trees on the far side of the estate, and a swift dark form, a dark-furred wolf, Billy, I thought, flew from beneath one tree toward a patch of dark shadow on the grass, not 20 feet from me. I tensed and started to rise from my hiding place in the brush to call out to the wolf as he ran. A bright red dot of light appeared against the wolf's fur. There was a hollow sound, something I could hardly hear, like a politely covered cough. I saw the wolf jerk, a flash of blue feathered against its fur, and then the beast tumbled into a roll and fell to the ground. It struggled for a moment back to its feet and reached for the dart in its flank and its jaws. Its balance wavered, and the wolf staggered to one side and fell. I saw its chest heaving, and one of its rear legs twitched spasmodically. I thought I could see the beast's eyes, Billy's eyes, focus on me for a moment, and then they glazed over and went vacant. "Nice shot," called a deep, tense voice. In the ring of evergreens, there was a motion, and then Denton appeared, walking out across the grass toward the fallen wolf. His dark, short hair was still immaculately rigid. I couldn't see the veins in his forehead, despite the bright light. It was a subtle change in him, one of several. His tie was loose. His jacket was unbuttoned. He moved with less steel in his backbone, more fire in his belly. There was an animal quality to him, a surety and savagery of purpose that had been uncertain before. And what it meant was a lot more significant than the changes that showed on his exterior. His restraint was gone. Whatever last remnants of doubt or regret that had enabled him to maintain his own self-control and some measure of control over the other Hexenwolfen had vanished in the blood frenzy in the full moon garage. It was in every line of him now, in every step, every flicker of his eyes. The man had become a predator. From the evergreens behind him appeared the rest of the Hexenwolfen. Ben, now dressed only in a white dress shirt and a gray business skirt, her legs dark and rippling with muscle in the moonlight. Harris, his ears still sticking out, his freckles, dark spots against pale skin. His manner restless and hungry. And Wilson, still in his wrinkled suit, with his shirt unbuttoned, his pot belly overlapping the belt of dark fur that was around his waist. He stroked and patted it with his fat fingers. His mouth was set in an odd, dangerous grin. Denton moved across the grass to the fallen wolf and nudged it with his toe. "Six," he said. "Did you count six?" "Six," Ben confirmed, her voice throaty. "Can we have them now?" She reached Denton's side and pressed up against him, lifting one leg to rub against his, burying it to the top of her thigh as she did. "Not yet," Denton said. He looked around him thoughtfully, and my gaze followed his. Scattered around a circle of perhaps 50 yards diameter were several dark lumps I had taken to be indentations in the ground, shadows cast by the moon and the ground's lighting. I looked again and saw, with a little surge of fearful understanding, that they weren't indentations. They were wolves, my allies. The dark patch Billy had been running for gave a little whimper, and I thought I saw the moon glint off George's tawny coat. I looked around and counted the fallen. 6. I couldn't tell them apart very well. Couldn't tell which of them, if any, was Terra, but I counted 6 fallen wolves upon the ground. All of them, I thought, with a panic rush of fear. All of them had been taken. "Come on," Harris said, his voice tight, strained. "Fuck McFinn. He isn't showing up. Let's take them out, all of them, and go find Dresden." "We'll get your belt soon enough, kid," Wilson snorted, his fingers stroking the fur belt over his belly. "If you hadn't been so stupid as to lose it," Harris snarled, and Denton shook Ben from his side to get between the other two men. "Shut up, now. We don't have time for this. Harris, we'll go after the wizard as soon as we can. Wilson, keep your fat mouth shut if you like your tongue where it is, and both of you back off." The men made low, growling noises, and they took steps away from one another. I licked my lips. I was shaking. The gun felt heavy in my hand. There were only the four of them, I thought. They weren't more than 30 feet away. I could start shooting right now. If I got lucky, I could down them all. They were werewolves, but they weren't invincible. I slipped the safety off the pistol and drew a steadying breath. It was a damn fool thing to do, and I knew it. Life is not the movies. It wasn't likely I'd be able to shoot them all before they could draw and shoot back. But I didn't have much choice. Denton turned toward the first hillock, with its artfully ruined temple, and waved. "All right," he called. "That's all of them." A pair of shapes appeared from the lights that shone from the temple, and then came down the hill toward Denton and the Hexenwolfen. Marconi was dressed in a flannel shirt, jeans, and a hunter's vest, and he wore a gleaming rifle, an enormous scope mounted on it, in one hand. Hendricks, hulking beside him in muscle-bound silence, was dressed in what looked like black military fatigues, bearing the gun I'd seen earlier, a knife, and various other gear. Hendricks' eyes flickered over Denton and his associates warily. I stared at Marconi in shock. It took me a moment to pick my jaw up off the ground and piece together what was going on. Marconi didn't know. He didn't know that Denton and his company were out to get him. He must have blamed the other killings on MacFin and the Alphas. So now Denton had Marconi and the Alphas there. Once MacFin arrived, he would be able to kill everyone he wanted dead, everyone who knew what was going on, and be able to make up any story he damn well pleased. Everyone but me, that is. He did not, as yet, have his hands on me. "These are all we saw on the monitors," Marconi corrected. "There was a malfunction in Camera 6 at the rear line of the property. Mr. Dresden and such malfunctions tend to go hand in hand." "Damn it." "Are you sure the wizard isn't one of them?" Denton demanded. "One of the wolves?"
"I think not," Marconi answered. "But I suppose anything is possible."
Denton scowled. "Then he's not here."
"If he truly offered you a challenge, he's here," Marconi said, his tone completely confident. "I'm certain of that."
"And he just watched his werewolf friends get shot down?" Denton asked.
"Wolves run faster than men," Marconi pointed out. "Possibly he hasn't caught up to them yet. He could be watching us even now."
"You're giving him too much credit," Denton said, but I saw his eyes instinctively shift toward the blackness of the growth of woods. If I stood up, he would be looking right at me. I froze, holding my breath.
"Am I?" Marconi smiled and leaned down to pluck the feathered dart from Billy's furry flank. "The tranquilizers likely won't hold these beasts for very long. Decisions need to be made, gentlemen. And if you are to hold to your end of the bargain, you had best get to work producing."
I don't know if Marconi noticed Ben's sudden tension, the way she slid her hands over her stomach, but I did.
"Kill these dogs now," she said in a low, heated voice. "It prevents complications later in the evening."
Marconi tisked. "Short-sighted. Let MacFin tear them to pieces when he arrives, and any medical examiner won't bother to look for the tranquilizers. If one of you does it, it will create awkward questions once forensics takes a look at things. And I thought that was the point of you coming to me with this offer, reducing questions."
Ben lifted her lips away from her teeth, and I saw the tips of her breast stiffen beneath her white shirt. "I hate slimy scum like you, Marconi," she purred, sliding her hand from her thigh up over her hip and beneath the buttons of her shirt.
Marconi's eyes narrowed on her, and as though connected to the crime lord by some telepathic leash, Hendricks made one simple motion, a shift of his forward arm, that chambered a round on the gun with a cold little click-clack. Denton gave Marconi a sharp look and took hold of Ben's wrist with his hand. The woman tensed for a second, resisting him, but then allowed Denton to draw her hand away from the belt that was surely beneath her shirt. Denton released her, and Ben lowered her hands, visibly relaxing. Marconi and Hendricks never so much as blinked or broke a sweat. Fragile situations like this one were evidently second nature to them. I let out a breath I'd been holding for a long time. 6-1, and ready for a fight. If I attacked them now, I didn't have a prayer. If I tried to move, to fade back into the trees, they would be likely to notice me. Damn.
Denton glanced to the trees once more, and I held my breath again. Don't worry, Marconi, he said. We'll turn the wizard over to you once we find him, no questions asked. That being the case, Marconi said, I suggest you start looking while I make preparations for Mr. MacFin. Please remember that I want Mr. Dresden alive, if possible. My throat constricted, and if I hadn't been holding my breath, I think it would have let out a little squeak. What in the world would John Marconi want with me after the incident in the parking garage? Nothing good, certainly. Nothing I wanted to think about. Damn. This night was getting spookier all the time. Of course, Mr. Marconi, Denton said, his tone a little too polite. Do you have any suggestions where we would start looking? Marconi ignored the sarcasm, flicked a switch on the side of his rifle, and pointed it negligently at the tree line. Over there ought to do. The red dot of the laser sight settled onto a leaf 6 inches to the left of my head, and the thready pulse of fear in my chest turned into an icy white streak of horror. Damn. Chapter 30. If I ran, I would have been seen and pursued and likely torn apart. If I remained where I was hidden, I would be found and then torn apart, or shot, or tranquilized and given to Johnny Marconi. A poor set of choices, but I wasn't going to get any better ones by sitting on my ass. So I got my feet underneath me and started easing back into the woods, the confiscated semi-automatic still in my hand. Hold it, Denton said. Did you hear that? What? Ben asked. I could hear a sudden eager tension in her voice, and I struggled not to make any more noise as I hurried my pace back into the shelter of the deeper trees. Quiet, Denton snarled, and I froze in place. Wind and rain were the only sounds for a few minutes in the chilly autumn night. Over there, Denton said after a moment. I think I heard it over that way. Could be a raccoon, squirrel, or cat, Wilson suggested. Don't be naive, came Marconi's voice, laced with scorn. It's him. There was an immediate sound of a slide being worked on a handgun, a round being chambered into place. Move forward, said Denton. That way. Fan out and we'll take him. Watch yourself. We don't know what he can do. Don't take any chances. His voice came closer as he spoke, and I nearly bolted. There was a couple of assenting sounds and another couple of weapons being readied. Footsteps came toward me through the grass. After that, I did bolt, just stood up and ran, bent over as low as I could. There was a shout from behind me and the bark of a gun being fired. I pointed the semi-automatic above me, afraid to fire back at them for fear of hitting Terra or one of the Alphas by mistake, and pulled the trigger twice. The gunshots must have surprised them because Denton and the others scattered for cover behind the nearest trees. I ran deeper into the woods, marshaling my thoughts. I had gained a little time, but time to do what? Running would only put me up against a stone wall, and I doubted I'd be able to climb it with a bum foot and a wounded shoulder. And I could only play the rabbit in the woods for so long before I was found. Damn it, I thought. I'm no rabbit. It was about time the hunters became the hunted around here. I moved ahead, silent and intent now, and scanned around me, searching for the sort of place I would need. I found it almost at once. An inward curved hollow at the base of a large tree, and slid into it, nestling into the wood's embrace. I put my head down, hiding the paleness of my face and the gleam of the whites of my eyes, and listened. They came forward quietly, and without any lights flickering around the edges of my vision. Maybe Denton and his cronies were getting used to the darkness. They were moving forward in a ragged line, 20 or 30 paces apart, and somehow keeping mostly parallel. They were all still on 2 feet by the sound of the steps, thank my lucky stars. If they'd gone to wolf form, they might have had me. Of course, on 2 legs, they still had their hands free to hold guns of their own. There are pros and cons to everything, I suppose. I held my breath when footsteps approached me. They came within 10 feet, then 5. I felt the brush stir when someone walked past no more than a foot away, making the leaves brush up against me. They stopped right there, and I heard a little woofling sound, sniffling. I thought of the aroma of my brand new leather coat and clenched my jaws down slightly, tension thrumming through me and making my legs shake. About 10 billion years went by, and then whoever it was began walking again, forward and past me. I would have let out a sigh of relief if the most dangerous part of my plan wasn't still to come. I got up from my hiding place, stepped forward, and jammed the barrel of the semi-automatic against the back of the neck of the person before me. It was Denton. His back arched, and he sucked in a stunned breath. "Quiet," I whispered. "Don't move." Denton hissed, but froze in place. "Dresden, I should kill you now." "Try it," I said, and thumbed back the hammer of the gun. "But after the loud noise, remember to keep going down the tunnel and toward the light." Denton's shoulders shifted a fraction, and I said, "Don't move your arms at all. Reach for that belt, and I'll kill you before you're halfway to Furry, Denton. Drop the gun." Denton moved his fingers enough to close the safety on his gun and let it fall. "Not bad, Dresden," he said, "but this isn't going to do you any good. Put the gun down, and we'll talk about this." "Smooth, polite, nice delivery," I said. "They teach you that at the FBI? "Don't make this any harder on yourself than it has to be," Denton said, his voice toneless. "You can't get out of this." "They always say that," I said, and used my free arm, though it made my shoulder twitch, to take him by the collar and hold him steady. "My arm's feeling a little weak," I said. "Don't do anything to make me slip." I felt his body tense at my words. "What are you doing, Dresden?" "You and me, we're going to turn around," I said, with a little shove of the gun against his neck to emphasize the point. "And then we're going to order all of your people out of the trees and back into the light. They'll each call to you from there so that I know they're in front of me, and then we are going to go see them." "What do you hope to accomplish here, Dresden?" Denton said. I let go of his neck, pressed close, and reached around him to remove the wolf pelt belt from around his middle. I saw his jawline shift as I took the belt away, but he remained still and quiet, his hands in the air. "I was just going to ask you the same thing, Denton," I said. "Now, call your buddies out of the trees." Denton might have been a cool customer, maybe a treacherous sneak, maybe a murderer, but one thing he wasn't was a fool. He called out to the other three agents and told them to get out of the trees. "Dent," Wilson called, "are you okay?" "Just do it," Denton answered. "It will all be clear in a minute." They did it. I heard them move out of the woods and call to him from the cut level grass of Marconi's estate. "Now," I said, "walk. Don't trip, because I swear to God I'd rather blow your head off over a misunderstanding than get suckered by a trick and killed." "Maybe you should put the safety on," Denton said, "because if you kill me, you'll never get out of here alive." I hate it when the bad guys have a point. But I chose to err on the side of Denton getting blown apart and left the safety where it was. I slung the wolf belt over my shoulder, took Denton's collar again, and said, "Walk." He did. We walked out of the deep darkness of the woods and into the light. I kept at the edge of the darkness and put a tree's trunk to my back, keeping Denton between me and the bad guys. They were spread out, the three of them in a little half-circle about 30 feet away, and they all had guns. You know, it would have been one hell of a marksman who could get at me with Denton's broad, solid form in front of me and the shadows veiling me, but I didn't take chances. I crouched down behind him some, leaving nothing but the corner of my head and one eye showing. At least that way, I thought, if they shot me, I'd never feel it. "Hi, guys," I said, a bit lamely. "I got your boss. Put the guns down, take your belts off, and walk away from them nice and slow, or I'll kill him." A part of me, probably the smarter part, groaned at my course of action and started cataloging the number of federal and state crime codes I was breaking into tiny pieces by taking a member of the Federal Bureau of Investigations hostage and threatening to kill him and attempting to take hostage three more. I stopped counting broken laws at 10 and waited to see the Hexenwolfen's response. "To hell with you," Ben snarled. A silver-haired woman dropped her gun and ripped off her shirt, revealing a torso that was impressive in a number of senses, and another wolf-hide belt. "I'll tear your fucking throat out myself." "Deborah," Denton said, his voice strained. "Don't. Please." "Go ahead, bitch," growled Harris,
His big ears created a half moon of shadows of blackness on the sides of his head. Denton buys it, we all get promoted. Hell, the wizard will probably shoot you while he's at it.
Ben whirled toward Harris, lifting her hands as though she were strangling him, fingers clenching like talons.
Shut up, I said. Both of you. Put your guns down. Now.
Harris sneered at me.
You won't, Dresden. You don't have the guts.
Roger, Denton said very quietly. You're an idiot. The man's in a corner. Now put down your gun.
I blinked, surprised at the unexpected support. It made me instantly suspicious. That Marconi was out of sight did not mean he was out of mind either. Where was he?
Crouched somewhere, aiming that rifle at me. I kept an eye out for bright red dots.
That's right, I appended a Denton's statement. You are an idiot. Drop the gun. You too, Wilson, I added, glancing at the overweight agent. And you and Ben, take your belts off, too. Leave them on the ground.
Do it, Denton confirmed, and I got a little more nervous. The man was relaxed now, not resisting me. His voice was solid, confident, unimpressed. That was bad. Denton's pack obeyed him, if reluctantly. Ben dropped the belt to the ground in the same way Scrooge might have let fall a string of diamonds, a visible ache in the motion. Wilson grunted as his belt came unfastened and his belly flopped out a little as the catch released. He left it on the ground by his gun. Harris glanced at me, but he lowered his gun too.
Now, step back, all of you.
Yes, Denton said. Harris, Wilson, step back to the trees and bring out what we left there.
Hey, I said, what the hell are you talking about? Don't move, any of you.
Harris and Wilson smirked at me and began walking toward the trees.
Get your asses back here.
Shoot at them, Mr. Dresden, Denton said, and you will have to take your gun off me.
I think I can reach it, if you do that, and turn this into a fight. You are resourceful and intelligent, but you are also wounded. I don't think you could overcome me hand to hand.
I glanced between the two men and Denton.
Damn it, I said. What are you up to, Denton?
You try anything funny, anything at all, and you're not going to live to regret it.
I'm with the FBI. We don't do anything that could be construed as funny, Mr. Dresden.
I swore quietly and could all but feel Denton's mouth stretch into a smile.
Why? I asked him. Why did you get involved with these belts? Why are you doing this?
Denton began to shrug, but evidently thought better of it.
Too many years of seeing men like Marconi laugh at the law, of seeing people hurt by him, death, misery brought on by him and people like him. I was just tired of watching. I decided to stop him, and men like him.
By killing them, I said.
I was given the power, I used it.
What gives you the right to mandate their deaths?
What gives them the right, Denton asked, to kill? Should I stand by and let them slaughter Dresden, if I could stop it? I have the power and the responsibility to use it.
I felt a little shiver run through me as the words struck close to home.
And the other people? The innocents who have died?
Denton hesitated. His reply was quiet.
It was unfortunate. An accident. It was never my intention.
The belts do more than make you fuzzy, Denton. They change the way you think, the way you act.
I can control my people, Denton said.
Like you did last month, I said.
He swallowed and said nothing.
And you knew, didn't you? You knew they'd find out, and that's why you sent me to the Full Moon Garage.
The vein on his forehead pulsed.
After the deaths, I was warned about the governing body, a sort of magic police, the White Council, that worked for them.
I almost laughed. Yeah, well, someone told you part of the story anyway, Denton. That's why you messed up with MacFin's circle, isn't it? You needed a patsy, and you turned MacFin loose, knowing that the council would suspect him. The street wolves for the cops, and MacFin for the council.
Denton snarled. Necessary sacrifices. There was work to be done, Dresden.
Oh, yeah?
As one of the aforementioned sacrifices, I don't find myself agreeing with you, I said.
To hell with the law, right? That's what you're saying, that you're above the law, like Marconi.
Denton grew tense again and turned his head a bit toward me, like he might have been listening.
I pressed him, hard, desperate to reach him. If I could, I might be able to get out of this situation after all.
Those belts, man, the power they've given you, it's bad. You can't handle it. It's gotten into your head and you aren't thinking straight. Give them up. You can still walk away from this. Do the right thing. Come on, Denton. Don't throw away everything you fought for all these years. There's a better way than this.
Denton was silent for a long time. Harris and Wilson disappeared in the thick ring of pine trees. Ben watched us, her eyes bright, her body muscled and firm in the moonlight, her breasts rather pretty and distracting as she breathed. She looked from the pair of us to the fur belt on the ground, alternatively, and her breaths came ragged.
"Look at her," I said. "Those belts are like a drug. Is this the kind of person she was? Is this the kind of person you want to be? Wilson? Harris? Were they always like they are now? You're turning into monsters, man. You've got to get out of this before you're all the way gone."
Denton closed his eyes, then shook his head.
"You're a decent man, Mr. Dresden, but you've got no idea of how the world works. I'm sorry you've gotten in the way." He opened his eyes again. "Necessary sacrifices."
"Damn it," I said. "Don't you see that this won't do you any good? Even if you do get away with wiping out everyone here tonight, Murphy is going to piece together what happened."
Denton glanced at me and said, like a mantra, "Necessary sacrifices."
I swallowed, suddenly more cold than I had been. It was eerie, the way Denton said the words, so matter-of-fact, calm, rational. There was no doubt in him, when he should have been afraid. Only fools and madmen know that kind of certainty. And I'd already noted that Denton was no fool.
Harris and Wilson emerged from the trees, carrying something between them. Someone hooded, arms and legs bound. Harris had a knife in one hand and was against the base of the hood, which looked to be a pillow. His big ears and freckles were at sharp odds with the arrogant competence with which he held the knife.
"Damn you," I said quietly. Denton said nothing.
Ben's eyes glittered in the moonlight, bright and vacant of anything but lust or hunger. The two agents brought the prisoner over, and Wilson dropped the legs. Harris kept the knife steady, while the overweight man went to remove the hood, but I'd already seen the cast on the prisoner's arm. Murphy's face was pale, her golden hair bleached to silver by the moonlight and falling down around her eyes. Her mouth was covered in cloth or duct tape, one of the two, and there was blood clotted at the base of one nostril, a bruise purpling over one eye. She blinked for a moment, then kicked at Wilson. With the legs bound, it was ineffective, but when Harris snarled and pressed a knife against her throat, she stopped struggling. Her blue eyes glared in fury at Harris and then Wilson, and then they settled on me and widened.
"Kill me, Mr. Dresden," Denton said quietly. "And Harris will cut the lieutenant's throat. Ben will go for her gun, as will Wilson. Likely they will kill you. And then they will kill these wolves you brought here with you, your allies. But even if you get us all first, Murphy will be dead, and you will be holding the weapon that killed four agents of the FBI."
"You bastard," I said. "You cold-blooded bastard."
"Necessary sacrifices, Mr. Dresden," Denton said, but it wasn't a calm phrase anymore. It was eager somehow, warmth curving around and through the woods like a lover's hands. "Drop your gun."
"No," I said, "I won't."
He wouldn't kill another cop, would he?
"Then Murphy dies," Denton said. "Harris?"
The redhead's shoulders lurched and Murphy tried to scream through the gag. I cried out and swung the barrel of the gun toward Harris. Denton's elbow came back into my gut, and then his fist snapped up into my nose, casting a field of stars across my vision. The gun went off, pointed somewhere, and then Denton slapped it from my hand and drove another blow into my throat that sent me sprawling to the ground, unable to breathe or move. Denton stopped to recover the gun and said, "You should have shot me while you had the chance, Mr. Dresden, instead of moralizing." He pointed it at me, and I watched his lips curve into a slow, hungry smile. "Beautiful moon tonight," he said. "Sort of reminds me of a story. How did it go?" I tried to tell him where he could stick the moon in his story, but it came out a strangled gasp, I still couldn't move. It hurt too much. Denton thumbed at the trigger, sighted down the barrel at my left eye, and said, "Ah, yes. And I'll huff, and I'll puff, and I'll blow your house down. Goodbye, wizard." Death by nursery tale. Hell's bells. Chapter 31. The barrel of Denton's gun looked bigger and deeper than the national debt as it swung to bear on my face. His gray eyes glittered down the sights at me, and I saw the decision to pull the trigger flash across them. Before he could, I met his eyes hard, shoved myself out toward him with a sudden screaming pain at my temples, and locked him into a soul gaze. There was a rushing sensation, as there usually was, a feeling of movement forward and then down, like being sucked into a whirlpool. I rode the sensation into Denton's head, a brief doubt crossing my mind. Maybe getting shot would be better than wading heart deep into Denton's soul. I can't describe what I found there very well. Try to imagine a place, a beautifully ordered structure, like the Parthenon or Monticello. Imagine that everything is balanced, everything in proportion, everything is smooth and secure. Stick in blue skies overhead, green grass all around, puffy white clouds, flowers, and children running and playing. Now add a couple of 100 years of wear and tear to it. Dull the edges, round the corners a little. Imagine water stains and worn spots where the wind had gotten to it. Turn the skies dirty brown with smog, kill the grass and replace with tall, ugly ragweed. Ditch the flowers and leave in their places only dried-up skeletal rose vines. Age the male children into adult winos, faces haggard with despair and self-loathing and flushed with drink. And the girls into tired, jaded strumpets, faces hard, eyes cold and calculating. Give the place of beauty an aura of rage and feral abandon, where people who walk about watch the shadows like a hungry cat, waiting to pounce. And then, after all of that, after all the cares and trials and difficulties of the world the cop inhabits have been fairly represented, coat everything in a thick, sticky, black sludge that smells like swamps and things that attract dun-colored flies, paint it on. Make it a coating that emphasizes the filth, the decay, the despair all around, that brings out the painful decline to the utmost degree. The sludge makes things stronger and more bitter, more rotten, more putrid all at the same time. That was Denton inside. A good man, jaded by years and poisoned by the power that had taken control of him, until that good man had been buried and only the filth and decay remained. Until the existence of the man who had once been was only a bitter reminder that made the man who was now seem all the more downfallen by comparison. I understood Denton's pain and his rage, and I understood how the dark power he'd taken had pushed him over the edge. There was an image of him kneeling at someone's feet as a wolf fur belt was passed into his hands, and then it was gone. Knowing the man he had once been made clear to me the beast he had become, all violence and hunger and craving. I felt tears on my cheeks and violent shudders shaking down my spine. I could pity Denton and the others with him, but now, more than ever, they scared the crap out of me. I had bought myself a few seconds, at least, with the soul gaze, but would it be enough to keep Denton from blowing my head off? Denton stared at me as the soul gaze broke and we both released. He wasn't reacting well to whatever it was he had seen inside of me. His face had gone white, and his hands were trembling, the barrel of his gun wavering every which way. He lifted his other hand to mop beads of cold sweat away from his face. "No," Denton said, white, showing all the way around the gray irises of his eyes. "No, wizard," he raised his gun. "I don't believe in hell. I won't let you." He screamed then, at the top of his lungs, "I won't let you!" I tensed up, preparing for a futile attempt to throw myself out of the way of a speeding bullet. "Yes," said a calm voice, "you will." A bright red dot appeared right in the middle of Denton's chest, cheerful as a Christmas light. I twisted my head around to see Marconi walking over the turf, his weapon pointed steadily at Denton. Hendricks looming to one side. Denton's lackeys were watching Marconi with bright, steady eyes. Murphy lay on the grass, her feet toward me, her head away. I couldn't see what condition she was in, and both fear and frustration leapt up into me for her sake.
Marconi, Denton said, his back straightened and his eyes narrowed. You treacherous scum.
Marconi clucked with his teeth.
Our bargain was that you would bring him to me alive, not execute him. Additionally, you may want to rethink the wisdom of using your own weapons. Let MacFinn kill him when he arrives.
If he arrives, Denton snarled.
My spotters, Marconi said, tell me that the animals I sent out with them went mad with fear about 2 minutes ago, 3 miles west of here.
I think it will not take him much longer to show up, Mr. Denton. His smile widened, but his money-colored eyes grew harder.
Now, shall we cease antagonizing one another and finish our business?
Marconi lowered the rifle and flicked the laser sight off. Denton looked from me to Marconi, and I saw the blackness rise up in his eyes, gather behind them, and get ready to come rolling out.
Marconi, I said, just shoot him now.
I think we've both had enough of your attempts to divide and conquer, Mr. Dresden, Marconi said, his voice bored. You're beaten. Acknowledge it with grace. I watched a slow smile spread over Denton's face as he kept the gun pointed at my head. My voice rose by a couple of notes of alarm.
I mean it, John. I really do. I shit you not. This entire thing is about them killing you.
What a vulgar reassurance, Marconi said. Agent Denton, we have a few details to attend to. Lower your gun and let us be about them.
I don't think so, Denton said, and he pointed at Hendricks and started pulling the trigger. The gun roared so many times, so quickly, that I couldn't tell how often Denton fired.
Hendricks snapped back onto his heels and then was driven flat onto his back by the force of the bullets slamming into him. He didn't have time to twitch, much less scream, and he dropped like a felled tree. I felt it in the earth when his massive body hit the ground.
Marconi started to raise his gun, but Wilson and Harris hurled at his back and dragged him to the ground, pounding on him with their fists.
Marconi writhed like an eel and slipped away from them, but then stepped into his path and thrust a gun into Marconi's face.
That's enough, he said, his voice grown coarse. Get them all and take them to the pit. MacFinn will be there any moment.
I took a moment to roll to my hands and knees and attempt to slip away unnoticed, but was brought up short by a pair of bare, muscular, feminine legs. My gaze followed the legs up, past the skirt, to a magnificently bare-breasted torso encircled by a wolf pelt belt. And then to a face dominated by eyes made eerie by the lack of anything recognizably sentient in them. Ben smiled at me, set her foot against my wounded shoulder, and with a sadistic twist of her ankle and a shove of her muscled leg, sent searing pain screaming through my body, making me crumple to the ground in agony. I remember them dragging me across the grounds. We passed into a ring of evergreens, and I remember thinking that any sounds originating in that circle of pines would be heavily muffled by their branches and needles, further muffled by the trees surrounding the property, as well as the high stone wall. Gunshots, for example, might not even be heard at all off the property. It was the clearest thought I had while my shoulder exploded. The next thing I remember was being shoved roughly forward. I fell, straight and hard, in the dispassionate grip of gravity, and after long enough for me to start to suck in a breath, I hit the water. It was only about 6 or 7 inches deep, and beneath it was swirling soft mud. I had a brief pang for my leather duster, and then I sank down into the water, my hands slipping into the mud and getting stuck there. Cold water burbled around my face and felt nice for a moment on my aching shoulder. Someone grabbed me by the collar and hauled me out of the water to sit me on my butt. Hands steadied me, and I sat with my shoulder aching and my head whirling until I could squint up and see who was there. Murphy dropped to one knee in the water beside me and smoothed back my damp hair.
Dresden, she said, you okay?
I took a look around me. I was at the bottom of an enormous pit, a square, maybe 10 feet deep and twice that across. Muddy water, maybe from the rain, covered the bottom of the pit, and the moon tinted its surface silvery brown. Directly above the pit's center, maybe 40 feet above me, was a square made of wooden planks, maybe 5 by 5. It was a hunter's platform, suspended by